Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
You know, there's nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Hello, and welcome everyone to ENN. We'll start off this Thursday night by saying good evening to Michael.
Why am I a nerd?
And then we'll say good evening to Don.
I do well.
Anything else, RJ, you like to say?
The Daily Don, you moron!
The Daily Don!
What do you think it is?
We mentioned it earlier, PGA action back. And today...
I will watch every golf!
There was a standstill at 8:46 at Colonial, with a moment of silence as a tribute to George Floyd. They listed the 8:46 tee time as a starting time with no players on the sheet. And then Jay Monahan, the commissioner, stood on the first tee and spoke about ending racial injustice. I can't say I watched the moment. Nice that they did it. I happen to have a thing of there are a few like buzzwords I think I prefer to see people hit. They kept it kind of safe. There's a way to go kind of safe when you use just words like racial injustice. Don't get me wrong, it's a big part of it, but I always feel that I guess I'm more impressed by the statements when people sort of tackle the issues a little bit more directly head on. But for the PGA Tour and the history there and at some of the clubs they've played at, etc., hard to complain about that. So and it was pretty cool. The parts of the tournament that I watched, guys, it looked relatively normal. I mean, the no crowd on a Thursday afternoon at sort of a middle of the road tournament, that's not one that people are normally dialed into. I thought it worked pretty well.
I think it's the sport that will work the best. I mean, just think about it. Crowds are constantly shushed at golf tournaments. It's supposed to be quiet. So you just see people and then they react if there's a great shot. Okay, so there's no reaction. So react at home when you're watching. I mean, this is the most conducive to playing without sound because the players are not losing anything in terms of being pumped up to play because they're not allowed to cheer before a shot. In baseball and football and basketball and hockey, people are cheering throughout. So that builds up your adrenaline. There's no adrenaline needed. You know, all you're losing without a crowd in golf is the reaction after a shot is made.
And think about how different, like comparing golf, for example, to if there's no fans at football. Think about how different a third down is in an opposing stadium with no crowd.
Yep.
You know, like if you don't go to football games, guys, what percentage of football fans are out there, you think, that don't go to football games?
85%.
Yeah, at least.
You think that many don't go to football games?
Well, because 20 million people watch a nothing game on a Sunday, and there's, what, 80,000 people in the stands?
Well, not only that, it's the large percentage, especially here in New York, of the fans are season tickets. I mean, I grew up a Giant fan. Now, my parents weren't wealthy. My dad didn't have a lot of money, you know, but so we couldn't get season tickets. But he had a buddy that did, so... I probably, from the age of when you start to become a sports fan, like you're really kind of understanding, what, like 7 or 8? Say 10. First 10 years of my life, I probably went to 5 Giant games.
I'll do you one better. I don't think I ever went to a Giant game or a Jet game until I covered one.
I went to 2 Redskins games as a kid. It was a huge, huge deal. Getting tickets. So I know back then, obviously, things may have been different. I said all of that to say, if you don't go to games in person, you may not realize that the most regular loud time in a game is when the home team is on defense on third down. Would you agree, Don?
Yes.
It's consistently loud, and if there's a big third down, it's really loud. That is clearly the loudest spot in a football game, and that will be different. As opposed to golf, where, to your point, I mean, seriously, how different is it? These guys play golf every single day on empty courses, by themselves, with a friend, with their coach. This is not going to affect the scores at all. And frankly, for me, as a home viewer, I don't really, with the exception of the Ryder Cup, like I said, where you're tuning in for the fans, you're just tuning in to see people play this game at a ridiculous level. And it's not different.
And of all the major sports where it does matter, I hate to say it because I love the sport. Football's a horrible sport to see in person. Horrible.
For so many reasons.
I mean, there's so much time between plays. In terms of like the ball being in play, the amount of time is minuscule. Minuscule. And there's so much dead time. Most of the time, at least in the Northeast, you're sitting in cold weather. It's much better to watch on TV. So I think the players might lose something without fans there. But the fans, they're in a better situation watching at home.
Football suffers from so many things in person, too. Like, for example, when you're watching on TV and the team you're rooting for picks up 7 yards on a run, you're really pumped. In person, a 7-yard carry looks like absolutely zero. None, unless it gets broken open to like a 10, 15, 20-yard run, nothing. You don't appreciate a hard 4.5-yard run in person. You get nothing. Even watching a quarterback throw, Don, when you see like a strike on TV, a 15 to 20-yard pass, I don't know. In person, it just doesn't do anything.
It's so strange when you're live how small the field really like looks, right? It's 100 yards.
Completely. I know.
So it just doesn't like, because one of the great, call it corny, but one of the like, cool things about doing the Jets pre and post for years is that when we were done with the 2-hour post game show, because our cars were parked on the other side, Greg and I and everybody with the staff, we'd walk on the field like to get on the other side. And it was like cool. Like you stand there in the middle of the field and you look at the goalpost, it doesn't look that big.
On TV?
But on TV,
it looks giant.
Because all you look at is what the screen allows you to see. So it just seems, but you're so right. But there's still, because I guess you don't get to go, because you were a Redskin fan, I was a Giant fan, it was hard to get tickets, so you really appreciated the chance of going.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of cool to be there. But Michael's right. The worst is the Super Bowl. Because with the long commercial breaks, it's like you're standing there. And there was, when we were growing up, you didn't know what was going on. Guy left the field. They didn't announce what the injury was. Unless you had like a radio with you.
By the way, that still happens all the time, though. When you're at a game, a player's injury, you may not even notice that a huge, especially like let's say a player on defense kind of like steps off, goes to the bench and doesn't come back in. You don't realize it.
The level of the telecast are so high tech. It's so much better than sitting in the stands.
So everyone's talking about this NASCAR driver who decided to quit because of the Confederate flag issue.
Driver of Jace.
But let's be clear. It's driver of Jace. Okay? Ray Cicerelli is in the NASCAR truck series. So it's NASCAR of Jace, but a lot of people talking about the fact that he wrote, quote, "Well, it's been a fun ride and a dream come true, but if this is the direction NASCAR is headed, we will not participate after the 2020 season is over. I don't believe in kneeling during the anthem, nor taking people right to fly whatever flag they love." He struggles with English a bit. Shocking. "I could care less about the Confederate flag, but there are people that do, and it doesn't make them a racist. All you are doing is bleeping one group to cater to another." So, good riddance, guy we've never heard of, who was in a series I didn't know existed, and even in that series didn't ever place high. We're going to be okay without you. Bubba Wallace, though, Don, I don't want to be crass, but like, and I'm not saying he wasn't well-known before that, but you would agree, I mean, this moment, it's sort of, I'm sure it's in many ways going to change his career. Bubba Wallace was on CNN, and he was talking about Confederate flags needing to go.
My next step would be to get rid of all Confederate flags. There should be no individual that is uncomfortable showing up to our events to have a good time with their family that feels some type of way about something they have seen, an object they have seen flying. No one should feel uncomfortable when they come to a NASCAR race.
And but here's an issue when we talk about, like, not getting it. Is that's enhanced by somebody like Bubba Wallace? He's 26. He's been racing for a little while here, and he had mentioned about he'd see the flag and he'd just ignore it. And this movement has emboldened him to step forward. Before the movement, he probably felt, listen, I'm the only African-American driver. Do I really want to raise a stink? And so people see him not saying anything, and it can kind of come across as, I guess he's okay with it, so I guess it's all right to do it. Right? Because his silence, I guess, made it seem like, well, if he was really bothered by it. But think about how difficult it would have been for him in NASCAR. There's two African-Americans of significance, him and Brad Daugherty, who owns a team. So how would he have been received in NASCAR if this happened a month ago?
By the way, is there any chance we could get Brad Daugherty on the show? First of all, he'd be fascinating to talk to about this issue. Second of all, we could then also talk about The Last Dance again. He had a good view of the Jordan shot over Elo. But I agree, like, people who are in the group that's been aggrieved, it's not fair. The onus shouldn't be on them.
Exactly.
To bring that up. And I'm really sick of us all looking at racism as a problem for black people. No, it's actually a problem for white people. And black people are the ones who have to suffer through that racism and oppression. But we as white people need to look at it as our issue that needs to be eradicated. It's a sickness that's been here for a very long time. And the fact that we're having legitimate conversations about lynching bills and getting rid of the Confederate flag is just, I don't even know what to say about it, how embarrassing it is. And I'll just never understand it. Like, I don't, how did the North win? And Michael, you're a history guy. The Union wins. It shapes the rest of the country. Slavery gets abolished. How does it continue to not only exist in, like, little pockets in the South, but, like, on Capitol Hill and at military bases? I don't understand. They lost.
I have no idea.
Well,
and keep in mind, you know what? You guys realize a lot of these statues and namings of important places and things after Confederate soldiers, you know, a lot of it didn't happen until the mid-1900s.
Oh, easily. Like 1920s, I think, the earliest.
At the earliest.
At the latest.
So,
you know, like,
this is
like,
40 years after they lost.
But you know what?
And then more.
But you know what's being said there? When they fly the flag at the town hall in some town in Mississippi, they're saying is, we lost, and we'll listen to your rules and what you would put, but we still believe what we believe.
Right.
Right? That you told us that slavery was wrong and we'll abide by your rules because you won, but you're not going to convince me how to feel in my head, and I'm going to raise that flag high and be proud of it. That's what they're saying. You lost. All right, you got, but what usually goes with the Confederate flag? What's the phrase that they all say? The South will rise again. So they... For a long time, I'm sure after the Civil War, Peter, they're probably figuring out how can we refight this? You didn't convince anybody. You lost, but you didn't convince them down the South that what was being implemented was right. For some, I don't want to pigeonhole everybody down there, but if you fly that flag,
stop yourself.
Yeah.
Let's talk NHL restart for a second. Training camps, Don. They're going to open July 10th for the 24 teams that are going to be involved, which is very soon, not too far off, a month away, a little less.
Yeah.
It's a part of phase three of the NHL's return to play. The league says it'll determine the length of camp and the NHL's actual return to games, which is phase four, at a future date.
Do you guys think that Ryan Seacrest will report to Times Square before baseball starts?
In other words, before New Year's?
Yeah, just wondering. Everybody's getting everywhere, but baseball, though, Rob Manfred said 100% we're going to play, still nothing.
Yeah, 100% because he's going to implement the 48 games.
We'll keep it NHL for a second, by the way. Wayne Simmonds was on Golic and Wingo, Don, to talk about the goal of the Hockey Diversity Alliance.
Our mission is to eradicate racism and intolerance in hockey. We want to strive to create positive change within the game of hockey. We truly believe that hockey is the greatest game on earth, or obviously we wouldn't be professional hockey players. But, I think to tackle these tough subjects, we know it's going to be they're going to be hard topics to talk about, especially in the hockey community. We have, like I said, only 30 to 40 probably players of color in the league. So, this is something that, we feel very passionate about. And, we're coming to the league with this idea, and, the league has, reached out to us as well. So we think it's going to be a great start.
Don, I mean, first of all, how bad is it in hockey? I mean, we've heard the stories, over the years, whether it's the fans throwing bananas on the ice, which you remember, and you hear the stories from players, but just from your purview and the conversations you've had, how much work? I'm sure there's a lot of work to be done.
A lot of work. I mean, especially at the junior level, in the minor league level. I mean, you've got a lot of minor league teams that play, in the South. Listen, it's been a white sport for a long time, right? Think about how many players in the National Hockey League. There are 40. I think 38 is the exact number of players of color, which might surprise people and think that's kind of a high number. But, it's a sport primarily played by white people, watched by white people. So the Kevin Weeks had horror stories of coming up through the minor leagues, the things that were said to him. They've got a lot of work to do to change their image as well. And they seem to be working at it. Like they've developed this group, and now you've got to be able to come forward. Because it's not like – that's why we had these problems with – and it happened in baseball. It happens in all sports, too, of the sexual predator that would go on in minor league hockey and in junior hockey. We saw what happened with Theo Fleury, right? Because it's not – to complain and to speak out, it's not ingrained in a lot of athletes, especially in the sport of hockey. Go about your business. Put your head down and play. And think of what festers and breeds, because you're not encouraged to speak out when you're wronged, because you might get cut. So that'd be an interesting guest to get too, like a Kevin Weeks. He's very well spoken. Just you don't hear about these stories. Joel Ward, remember? He was a member of the Washington Capitals. Beat the Bruins on a overtime goal. Got death threats from people in Boston, and believe me, there was a lot of racism in the tweets and the letters that he got. So I'm glad that they're trying to do something.
LeBron James talked to the New York Times about a newly formed nonprofit, More Than a Vote, that's going to aim to encourage Black people to register and submit votes in the November election, and expose voter suppression, misinformation being spread through social media, etc. Other athletes and entertainers, Draymond Green, Trae Young, Alvin Kamara, Steven Jackson, Kevin Hart, all going to be involved. And there will be specific cities and states targeted. This, of course, comes after just an absolute voting debacle in Georgia this week. Incredible lines, something like 80 less polling places, and a lot of concern about voting in this country. So LeBron doing what LeBron does.
I've always found that fascinating about this country. I mean, we're supposed to be the most advanced country in the world. We have these antiquated voting procedures and booths where you're actually sitting there in a booth scribbling something, and then you put it into a box as if it was 1912. It's just amazing to me. It really is. And you saw the poor people out in Georgia. I mean, they waited 8-9 hours, some of them, to vote. Who has that time to do that? Who would want to do that? It shouldn't be that difficult to vote. People say, get out and vote. Exercise your right to vote. Well, you got to make it easier for people to vote.
I know, but if you get computerized, Michael, there's a chance it can get hacked, right? So you almost want sometimes to have a paper voting just because it might be easier to stop the infiltration.
How did the paper voting work out in Florida in 2000?
I know. And you also have gerrymandering. I mean, there's so many things that really, you know, I felt like you. And
but
I
how
feel
could there
like,
be? I was listening to the Daily today. Sorry, Don, just real quick. How could during coronavirus? I interviewed the mayor of Atlanta today. That's where it came up. Keisha Lance Bottoms. And she was talking about how bad things were. And the main point they made was, how could they have less polling places at a time when you need to spread people out more?
Right. People were miles away from where they actually voted because of the separating by 6 feet.
So it's an unbelievable circumstance that we're facing. And people are really, really concerned about this election. And guys, well, what if we get to November and coronavirus is really back? So it's I don't understand how this is something that's a problem in our country. It's kind of, I know we're dealing with a lot of things that we're embarrassed about, but man, for a country that prides itself on being about freedom, free elections, you making the choice, etc., pretty embarrassing what our voting situation is.
And that's for both sides, and nobody should have to wait online that long to vote. I'm sorry. Nobody should.
No.
It's ridiculous. It's supposed to be the backbone of our country.
Let's see. There's a lot happening in the world of professional sports, guys. Let's talk C.J. Mosley, who talked to Rich Cimini. And he says that the
don't
NFL...
we call him the great Rich Cimini, Don? I mean, if it's the great E.J. Raddick, Cimini's been covering the Jets since he was 12.
Right.
I think he gets a great Rich Cimini.
You can call him anything you want.
But you
I'll
don't
call
agree?
Him,
Nobody's stopping you. I don't make you,
don't
you
agree
say
that
the great...
Cimini's great.
I don't make you say the great E.J. Raddick. That's something I say to him because
okay,
I believe
I understand.
He's great.
I'm not begrudging him the greatness. Can you say that Cimini is great? I want to hear it from your mouth.
Yes, I can say that. Do well, I say it? Maybe I should do a better job.
Yeah, I think we all should. We should all be calling him the great Rich Cimini.
But if you know me, that's my little like hiccup, right? That's my little crutch when I introduce a guest. That's why it was the great Pirates Brewers game. Right? Why don't we
that
play
that?
That
was a great
cut?
Game, though. You are not far off.
So I had no idea who was coming on.
Don and Peter with you until 7, and then we are going to have the great Brewers-Pirates game coming up at 7 o'clock.
You know what bothers me about that, Don? Is that it shows how disingenuous you are. So anybody that would have been on the air, other than you would have thrown a great in there.
That's what I'm saying. That's why
I
called it.
He could have said the great Flotsam and Jetsam.
Right.
That's why I call it that's my crutch.
Tick.
That's a little tick that I have that everybody, and I do believe a lot. If we have, why would we put somebody on if we didn't think they were great?
Well, there have been people on this air that I don't
But I think E.J. Raddick is tremendous at what he does. So he, no question, is great, but you make a very fair point.
And what about
Rich Cimini has covered the Jets going back to the Daily News days.
Over 30 years, I think.
And he's great at what he does.
If Rich Cimini ever doesn't deliver, you know what I call him?
What's that?
Rich Cimini.
Wow.
If he's not good. But by the way, it's never happened yet. He's been great. So he talked to C.J. Mosley, and C.J. talked about a conversation that the Jets had with Christopher Johnson during a virtual team meeting and with players, coaches, and executives, and they talked about how they can address social inequities. C.J. said he expressed his concerns, Christopher Johnson, and pretty much let us know that anything we needed, he was there to help. Of course, Christopher Johnson has taken a pro-player stance since taking over the Jets in 2017, especially on social justice issues. It's an interesting situation, that Woody and Chris Johnson situation, isn't it? They seem to have you can't say they have different approaches, because I guess we don't know where Woody Johnson would fall, but Christopher Johnson seems to approach it in a very, very pro-player way, and it's nice to hear something from an NFL owner, guys, because that is one group that has been very, very quiet.
It's interesting, Don, and you might know the answer to this, because I was reading in Brian Costello's mailbag today in the Post. Somebody asked, what happens when Woody comes back? Does the Johnson family own the Jets, or is it just Woody? Because Christopher Johnson said that even when Woody comes back, he wants to have a much larger role in running the team. Do you know if it's just Woody or is it the Johnson family?
I don't know if it's the Johnson family. I always was under the impression it was Woody. I could be wrong about this because there was a clear handing over of the power. So I don't know if it was like a Hank and Hal situation where it was just understood that Woody was the guy that was in control and then they had to shift the control when Woody went overseas, or whether Woody owned the team and then he had to kind of hand it down to Chris while he was gone and he intends to get it back when he comes. And so I don't know what Chris's exact role was when Woody was here. But I never got the impression that it was the Johnson family.
Yeah, me neither. That's why it's interesting that Christopher wants a bigger role. Well, Woody could tell him to take a walk.
He could. But I think that would be unfair since you trusted him to take over sole control of the team when he wasn't there. And then he's just supposed to, you know, go back into his corner and not contribute. So I would be interested to look that up. But it was always my impression, wasn't it yours, that that Woody Johnson owned the team? Like with Mara, it was always the Maras.
I think Christopher has really embraced the job. I'm not saying that Woody's uncomfortable with it because Woody walks the parking lots before the game and talks to the fans. But Christopher has a real feel for this. He really does. It'll be interesting to see how this comes down.
It says on Wikipedia, for whatever it's worth, says the owners of the Jets, Woody and Christopher Johnson.
Interesting, right?
And right now, because Woody's overseas, Christopher Johnson is the chairman and CEO.
So I wonder if, like, Christopher just changes the locks. Woody comes back, he can't get in.
Well, I will say this. Maybe it was just an oversight, and maybe nobody cared about it. But whenever we would go to Jets training camp, where they would put us on the roof there, like overlooking the practice facility, right. It also overlooked the parking lot of Florham Park, and they had Woody Johnson's like parking space. There was nothing for Christopher Johnson. It said Woody Johnson. Like they never changed it or anything. So I don't know if maybe there was an ownership change or something when he went over there. Maybe the NFL made it. Listen, if you're not going to be here, you're going to have to put Christopher's name on the mortgage. I don't know.
All right. So let me ask Peter this. It seems like his political leanings might be different. But do you think that Christopher Johnson will root for Donald Trump to win so Woody stays away for another 4 years?
Ooh, that's a really...
It's a great question, I think.
I guess that would depend on how strongly he feels about the political part versus...
Or how much he likes the Jet job.
And how much he likes the Jet job. RJ, this audio of Patrick Mahomes, is this him talking about backlash he was potentially going to face for the video? So we all know Patrick Mahomes was the most prominent... Arguably the most prominent face in that video made by the NFL Players Association last week about racial justice. And here's Mahomes asked if he was afraid of any backlash.
I feel like with every decision that you make, there's going to be positive and negatives. And that is the world that we live in today. But I believe in both my statement and the video that I made that that stuff needed to be said. We needed to come together as a group, as players, and show that we believe that Black Lives Matter and that we believe that this needs to be informed and we need to be the role models to go out there and take that step.
I read a lot on this, Peter. Mm-hmm. Many people think that Mahomes' involvement in that video is the most significant involvement. There were big stars there.
No, but he
but Pat
jumps
Mahomes
right out.
Is the star of the league right now. You could say Brady, you know, obviously his body of work, but Pat Mahomes is everything that the NFL is about. Greatness on the field. He carries himself beautifully, and he doesn't embarrass the league or the team. He's everything that you'd want in a player that could be the face of the league. And he shows up on that video. The NFL owners took notice. That was a big deal that he did that, and he has to be credited for that.
Agree. It was a big deal, big moment. And on this day in sports history, let's go all the way back to 1997.
Here's Jordan. Yes! Michael Jordan from straight away.
Double team Scotty down low and leaving Michael Jordan. He knocks down this three, gives him the huge lead, and then the total exhaustion on the bench.
The flu game.
23 years after the flu game.
The food.
We've got questions about the pizza.
The hangover game. What is it now? It's not the flu game anymore, guys.
You won't even call it that. You're disgusted.
Well, because we've ruled that out, right? The story from the source is a food poisoning. So it's not flu.
Call it the vomit game, because vomit was involved either one.
But either way, we do have questions about the pizza, am I right?
Yes, I do. We've got questions about the pizza.
That'll do it for ENN on this Thursday evening.
Wow, almost knocked over the mic. I was so excited.
Well, that it's over?
Yeah, no, that it was good.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.